Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. The president of Vanuatu appealed for international assistance Saturday after a devastating tropical cyclone slammed his South Pacific island nation. Addressing a United Nations conference on disaster reduction in Japan, President Baldwin Lonsdale said he was speaking with a heavy heart. Carrying 270 kilometer per hour winds, Cyclone Pam destroyed entire villages, tearing off rooftops, downing power lines, and toppling trees. Reports of 44 deaths remain unconfirmed, as UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said the destruction and damage was feared to be widespread. The head of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency said Friday, Islamic State is well-armed and financed, but not invisible. John Brennan told the Council on Foreign Relations in New York that the militants are disciplined and battle-hardened and will not be stopped overnight.
But this is going to take time. I wouldn't expect the things to really turn around immediately here. I think this is going to be a long, tough fight. We know that ISIL has a lot of materiel. They've ransacked a lot of the Iraqi stockpiles. They also have shown that they're willing to kill themselves in defense of some areas as well as to go on the offense. So this has been a long and bloody fight.
But Brennan said the U.S.-led coalition airstrikes have softened many of the Islamic State forces, and there are serious signs that its engine is suffering. Syrian rebel leaders say they hope their recent tactical gains around Aleppo will prompt U.S. leaders to reverse recent cuts in supplies and funding to opposition militias. This is VOA News. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko said Friday there has been a gradual de-escalation in the fighting with Russian-backed separatists in the east. Mr. Poroshenko told Ukraine's 1+1 television, "The fact we have not had military losses for several days, this is a clear indication of a gradual de-escalation." But he said if the fighting flares up again, Ukraine will immediately receive lethal weapons from European Union nations. He did not say who has promised the arms and the exact kinds of weapons. Cameroon has strongly denied allegations that its military systematically executes Boko Haram suspects. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Cameroon government spokesman and communication minister Issa Chiruma Bakari said reports by rights groups that the country summarily executes Boko Haram suspects are unfounded. However, he admitted some of the suspects the rights groups said were killed were found dead in a detention cell in December, a day after they were arrested.
In the early morning, it was noticed that 25 out of the 56 had died.
Chiruma said the Cameroon government had opened investigations to determine the cause of their deaths and said a senior military official he refused to name had been arrested. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde.
A ferry carrying more than 200 people has sunk off the coast of western Myanmar, leaving at least 33 people dead and at least a dozen others missing. The Ong Takon went down late Friday after encountering high seas on a voyage from the town of Kiofi to Sitwe in western Rakhine State. Authorities said 167 people had been rescued, but the rest are believed to have drowned. Secretary of State John Kerry says it's unclear whether the U.S. and other world powers will be able to reach a deal with Iran on its nuclear program by a March 31st deadline. Speaking Saturday at an international investor conference in the Egyptian resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh, Kerry said the purpose of the talks is not just to get any deal, it is to get the right deal. Sierra Leone's Vice President Samuel Sam-Soumana has asked the United States for asylum after soldiers surrounded his house on Saturday. He said he's no longer at his residence, but it was not clear if he was at the U.S. Embassy in the capital of Freetown. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The president underwent a successful medical procedure yesterday, and doctors are satisfied with the findings. They will therefore discharge him Saturday, and he might leave for Lusaka Sunday.
Zambian President Edgar Lungu plans to return home on Sunday after a successful medical procedure in South Africa.
We now updated them about our preparations to conduct the 2015 general elections. We were able to explain to them the procedures and the guidelines.
The Nigerian Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, meets political parties for the last time ahead of the upcoming presidential election.
Not something new that hurricanes basically form out of thunderstorms of Africa. You get what's called the African easterly wave, waves in the atmosphere.
And recent scientific findings on hurricanes could lead to earlier warnings that could save lives and protect property. We'll have a report. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Zambian President Edgar Lungu plans to return home on Sunday after undergoing a successful medical procedure in neighboring South Africa. Earlier, I reached out to presidential spokesman Amos Chanda, who is currently with the president in South Africa, to give us an update about Mr. Lungu's current condition.
The president underwent a successful medical procedure yesterday, and doctors are satisfied with the findings. They will therefore discharge him Saturday, and he might leave for Lusaka Sunday.
You talked about the prognosis being good. Were there any pieces of advice that a doctor shared with the president about his hectic schedule following the surgery?
Yeah, they have kept the finer detail of the medical advice confidential, but they've been very gracious to tell us that the medical procedure was successful and that they will be discharging him, and that they are satisfied with the general condition. And they've advised him to return for medical review in a matter of weeks.
How is his spirit at the moment?
He's very well, in very high spirits. He's continued with lighter duties even as he is in hospital. He's attending to those matters that he can attend to whilst he's in hospital. He's in very, very high spirits. He's well.
Well, as you know, some Zambians were very worried about his ailment recently. What assurances will he be given to Zambians, especially now that he has undergone a very successful surgery or medical operation, as you called it?
We are hopeful that the openness that he has shown should be sufficient to reassure the Zambians that as president, he's a public figure, and given where we are coming from, where we have lost two presidents, the interest is very high among Zambians. So they should get the assurance that everything is all right, because all the procedures from the time when he was sick to the time when he's been treated have been made public, and we have issued medical bulletins at each time when doctors have reached a fundamental decision requiring communication. So Zambians must be assured that the president will resume duties immediately.
Some Zambians who have been expressing concern about the president say that this newly elected president should take extremely good care of his health, and they don't want to face another round of unfortunate incident.
And I think that precaution starts with his decision to seek medical treatment, and that's what we have done as late as possible, and to be open about it as much as possible, so that if anything is detected that requires urgent medical attention, we do get him to be treated as quickly as possible.
What is your message to Zambians as the president readies himself to return home?
The message to the Zambians is that they must continue to support the president and ensure that when any one of the political leaders is ill, whether it's the president or the opposition leaders, that's not a matter for celebration, that you cannot pursue your ambition through the tragedy of another person, because the mortality of every person is certain, whether they are president or not. So to appear as though you are immortal because you are in opposition is something senseless. Zambians must have the dignity to respect the confidentiality of medical records of a person, medical condition of a person, but he must appreciate that at least the president has opened up himself to a very, very extreme high standard of scrutiny.
Amos Chanda is the spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He spoke with me from South Africa. The Independent National Electoral Commission of Nigeria, or INEC, concluded its final meeting with all registered political parties Thursday ahead of the March 28th election. Nick Dazang, INEC's Deputy Director for Public Affairs, told me earlier that the electoral body is confident that the presidential election in 2 weeks will be transparent and credible.
We had the final meeting with leaders of the registered political parties ahead of the elections, in which we now updated them about our preparations to conduct the 2015 general elections. We were able to explain to them the procedures and the guidelines for the elections. We were able also to explain to them the ballots and the colors of the ballots and the papers that would be used on election day. And we were also able to share with them our own report of the demonstration of the card readers in 12 states of the Federation last Saturday.
But some political parties, especially the ruling PDP, had initially expressed some misgivings about the card readers. Some people have also said that the card readers would disenfranchise some people. How did you explain this to them about how this process is going to go during election day on March 28th?
Yes, the PDP and some other parties expressed misgivings about the card reader. As a matter of fact, one or two of the political parties, in addition to the ruling People's Democratic Party, canvassed outright that the card reader should not be used. But on our part, as a commission, what the card reader was supposed to achieve were four. One, to verify the permanent voter card, to authenticate the voter, to keep a trail of what has happened, the details of the accreditation at the polling unit, and also to now send the total number of those accredited in a particular polling unit to our server. Now, in the course of our demonstrations, we are able to achieve verification of the voter to the tune of 100%. Secondly, we are also satisfied that even if after the card reader has verified the voter, but it does not authenticate him at the end of the day, there is an incident form which our staff at the polling unit will fill in respect of whoever, you know, was not ultimately verified by the card reader, and the person would be allowed to vote, which means that at the end of the day, anyone who presents himself with a genuine permanent voter card will be accredited and be allowed to vote, and such a person, even if at the end of the day he is not verified by the card reader, you know, will not be disenfranchised.
Is the commission worried that this could lead to legal dispute about the outcome of the election, since they have expressed concern about the use of the card readers?
No, we don't have any concerns in respect of that, because all the things we do in terms of the guidelines and the procedures for the elections are informed and guided by the Constitution and the Electoral Act 2010 as amended. So we have no fears in respect of that. We have no concerns. But what we are doing is to make sure that we carry the political parties along and other critical stakeholders in the process as much as possible. And because of that, since 2011, we've had a structured meeting, especially with the political parties, on a quarterly basis. And as the elections approached, we now escalated these meetings to monthly basis, and now we even conduct these meetings on a weekly basis.
Nick Dazang is Deputy Director for Public Affairs at the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. For the latest update on the Nigerian upcoming election, Ide Felix Igwabo, a journalist and social commentator, joins us live via telephone link up from the capital, Abuja. Good evening, Ide.
Good evening, Peter. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, my brother.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Wonderful. Edith, now tell me, there are suggestions that President Goodluck Jonathan is having problems with the northern vote. What is your take on that?
I do not think that that is very correct. As far as I know, these campaigns have been a little on the propaganda side, especially from the opposition party. Now, how are they able to determine that the president has problems in the northern part of the country? He has been to all parts of the north that he was scheduled to visit for campaigns, even though there were some incidents of instigated stoning of the convoy and so on and so forth. But I'm saying to you, as for as long as northern Nigeria is part of Nigeria, it is a territory under which he presides as the president and the commander-in-chief of the Federal Republic.
Now,
Buhari is from the north.
Now, now supporters of main challenger General Buhari have accused the ruling PDP of smear campaign ahead of the election, and they said this is because the momentum appears to be shifting in the opposition leader's favor, as some analysts have been saying. What say you?
Again, another generalization. People just assume things. There are no scientific proofs to any of these assertions. Why would the president... So, you see, both parties are guilty of an offense which only one is claiming. I concede that these campaigns have been the most vociferous, the most intense and passionate campaigns we have seen for a very long time. But it is wrong for one side to begin to accuse the other side of flouting the rules or of why would anybody who Buhari has submitted himself to be president of Nigeria, he must therefore be closely scrutinized. He must be examined right from the day he was born. And that is the same thing for the president. So if in examining the Buhari issue and a few things come to the public, people should not be averse to that. That is exactly what the presidential campaign is all about.
Now, the issue has come up with a diplomatic row between Abuja and Rabat, where the top envoy to Nigeria was pulled by the Moroccan government. What is the latest development on that?
The truth of the matter is that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, officials of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, may have come up with something that wasn't completely accurate in asserting that the president had a discussion with the Moroccan king. Now, true to type, the president has heard all sides to this issue and has asked the ministry to investigate and take punitive measures against whoever was responsible for that irresponsibility. Because it has sparked up a diplomatic row, and the president himself says, yes, I have requested to speak to certain African leaders from North Africa, but certainly I have not spoken to the Moroccan king. And that ought to put an end to the issue, if you ask me. But we are in political times, we are in campaign times, and so opposition has decided to make political capital of it, and I don't think that is worthwhile.
Looking at the media itself, there are suggestions that some media personalities and some media organizations have taken sides in this election campaign ahead of the election. What is your sense of what is going on the ground in terms of the media?
Peter, you and I know that in the U.S., for instance, it is absolutely acceptable for a media house to endorse candidates on both sides of the divide.
Ide Felix Igwabo is a Nigerian journalist and social commentator. He joined us live from Abuja. Meanwhile, the Nigerian military, aided by a regional alliance, has reportedly taken back some territories from Boko Haram. But a security expert cautions that the military option alone might not be sufficient to defeat the insurgency. Dr. Andrews Ata Asamoah is a senior researcher at the Institute of Security Studies. For analysis about the security situation in Nigeria, my colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in the South African capital, Pretoria.
I think that dialogue is very important, but I think we should open that as another approach whilst also pursuing the military option. And so those who will keep on engaging in violence and may not opt for dialogue, those can actually be dealt with in the military way. But we will need to keep an open channel of dialogue and amnesty for those who are willing to defect to the government side, so that we don't treat the whole Boko Haram as if it's a homogeneous group that is not interested in talking, and also shut the doors to those who want to defect to the government side. And I think that will really help. The over-militarization at the moment doesn't really help the matters much, because it's actually boot for boot, and that is really not going to help. Because for groups like Boko Haram, who are selling the whole message of martyrdom, the more you kill, the more you create room for more recruitment. And so over-militarization doesn't help in the long run. So I do agree that dialogue is important, but as to whether the Boko Haram is ready to talk now is another question. Amnesty then will be an important option, open for all those who are ready to defect to government, such that at any point that they feel they've been pushed enough and want to defect to government, then that is an open channel the government can then engage them. But those who want to keep communicating through the barrel of the gun, I think that it's important that the structures of the state engage them, if that's the language they understand.
In that case, all-out war alone may not solve the problem.
Yes, I agree. But for the international community and Western powers, we do know that there's their policy on not speaking to terrorists. This is quite out there, we all know. So for them, it will be contradictory for them to tell Nigeria to engage. I think it is up to Nigeria, knowing the nature of the threat, to find ways of dealing with it in a way that fits the situation. And that is where Nigeria will then have to adopt means beyond just military engagement, because there's a role for military engagement, but certainly there's also a much more prominent role at the moment required for non-military options. So I think that at that level, education is important, and that is one role that the government will have to play. But again, government can partner with civil society organizations that are involved in reintegration processes, and also the media in terms of, you know, pushing out the right message before these people can go back and settle into the community. Because once a civilian takes a gun and fights, the mindset and a lot of other things change. And so pushing that individual back to society as if nothing happened is actually very unfair, because for both the victims of what he might have done, but also the person's unreadiness to readjust into society. So a lot of things need to be done, but at the moment, we seem to be concentrating only on dealing with Boko Haram and stopping them, not really some of these consequences that follow.
Andrews Ata Asamoah is a senior researcher at the Institute of Security Studies. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Pretoria. Scientists have known for some time that storms generated over West Africa can become hurricanes, but a new study hints at which storms will actually do so and threaten the US, Canada, and Caribbean nations. The findings could lead to earlier warnings that could save lives and protect property. News Jody Kapwa has more on this report from Washington.
Colin Price has been studying thunderstorms over West Africa for many years and has a particular interest in lightning strikes. Africa is a hotspot for those. Price is a professor of geosciences at Tel Aviv University.
Not something new that hurricanes basically form out of thunderstorms over Africa. You get what's called the African easterly waves, waves in the atmosphere, and some of these waves, you can think of them as like waves in the ocean. Some of them will become unstable and will break. The breaking process would be like developing clouds and thunderstorms. Other parts of the waves will be more mellow and will just keep on going in the atmosphere and nothing really will develop out of them.
He says those waves move from east to west.
They get pushed by the trade winds into the Atlantic. And about 10% of those waves develop into hurricanes. We've always been interested in finding out what's so special about these waves, which will continue to develop and become strong and form hurricanes eventually.
The new study appears in Geophysical Research Letters.
What we found in this research paper is that when we look at the cloud cover, satellites in space can look down at the amount of the area covered by clouds, and the clouds are generally the tops of the thunderstorms. We saw that the larger the area covered by these thunderstorms, the larger the chances we have of developing into hurricanes in the next week or two. And there was also a connection, a link between the amount of cloud cover and the intensity of the storms a week later.
About 50 West African storms were studied over a six-year period between June and November. That's hurricane season. But Price says a lot more storms would need to be followed to confirm the findings for reliable weather forecasting. In January, Global Weather Oscillations, a hurricane prediction company, said 2015 will have the most active and dangerous hurricane season in 3 years. It's forecasting 14 named storms, with 8 of them being hurricanes, and it says 3 of them will be major hurricanes. Price says if a hurricane can be predicted 2 weeks before it actually forms, cities and towns could be much better prepared to deal with it. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing the internet. This light-hearted show discusses topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, land reform. Despite the end of colonial rule and apartheid, vast amounts of land in Zimbabwe and South Africa and other regions on the continent are not being redistributed fairly and efficiently. We'll discuss this issue next time on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in African news, features, and sports. We are also available on the internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.
Nigeria heads to the polls March 28th for a landmark election. What happens there matters throughout Africa. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. VOA reporters are in Nigeria and surrounding countries covering the campaigns and the issues and counting down to the March 28th election and beyond. Special Nigeria Decides 2015 coverage is underway now. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent, there we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies in Comparative Politics at Howard University. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
Ni umbiza sana, hey, upendo gani nasikuwa kuponi baby. Upendo gani upatikani hane. Upendo gani uniamini baby. Balu balu balu. Upendo gani nasikuoni baby. Upendo gani upatikani hane. Upendo gani uniamini baby. Balu 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 balu. Bila balu balu baby. Naomba mimi na wewe tu. Achana balu balu.
If you get money, eat your bologo. You get fine, baby, eat your bologo.
you get by me,
time for Hololo.
Make sure now they hear me say,
make for the Jupai, make for the Jupai, make for the Jupai, make for the Jupai, make for the Jupai.
Everybody make you jump, jump to the rhythm. Turn by turn, make we the jukebae. Oh, I'm be plenty, today not today. What? Make we the jolly, get in go-go-go, I get go-go-go. She una de hear me, yeah.
Everybody say, sing tango, say man no be God at all. Yo, wait, who God bless, no man can cause Nelua.
If you get money, DJ
go-go-go.
You get fine, baby,
DJ go-go-go.
If you get by me, make sure now they hear me say,
make for the Jupai, make for the Jupai, make for the Jupai, make for the Jupai, make for the Jupai.
Je m'en fous. Allez chérie, kanga chérie na yo. Mama pesa papa bis. Bis.
This one no be your yo. So make we take up small, small. Let's go like this. A direct coco. Hey, look at my baby. Hey, a direct coco.
You know, understand.
Look at my baby.
Can I learn from Jesus for making today a better day? Make we begin jolly, oh. I want to come up from house to work, but see what is man no fit to chop. If my what it is, yo. I see some people wanna pull me down. I see some people wanna crush me down. They can never, never stop me now. I can have Jesus today by my side.
Hey, hey.
Give me one bottle, of alcohol. Make a drink away my sorrows. Make a shaky, shaky the go. Because to evil, what it is, yo.
It must be not easy, yo.
Life is not easy, brother.
It must be not easy, yo. I did it. I see some people wanna go to Kotom. I see some people done the pop pop pop. I go to Ghana then they go to Kotom. I see for Togo then they pop pop pop. Give me one bottle, of alcohol. Make a drink away my sorrows. Make a shaky shaky the go. Because to evil what it is yo. In my super land it is yo.
Life is not easy, brother.
In my super land it is.
I dig it,
yo.
Aha! I need everybody in the house to join me. Make with a shake 'em, small, small. Let's go. Ojare koko. Hey, ukuma baby. Hey, ojare koko. Hey.
I see some people wanna go to koko. I see some people don't they come koko. I go to Ghana then they go to koko.
Hey, hey.
I say for Togo then they come koko.
Hey, hey.
Give me one bottle. One bottle of alcohol, whoa. Make I drink away my sorrows. Make I shake you, shake you, they go. Because if you want the easy,
you must be one of the easy.
Life is no easy, bro. You must be one
of the easy.
What did you do? Dig it in, put a no bomb. What did you do? Dig it in, touch a leaf. What did you do? Dig it in, much a long way.
Make a name who
want to be easy. What did you do? Dig it in, put a no bomb.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Welcome, Africa. It's always a pleasure for me to share my reflections on U.S. politics towards Africa with the audience of the Voice of America. Every week, I pay close attention to the headlines relating to African opinions on and attitudes toward the United States. This week, there are many issues in the world pertaining to many parts of the world beyond Africa. Of course, what is going on in Russia with regard to Ukraine, the need for ceasefire between the Ukrainian rebels against the government of Ukraine definitely has relevance for Africa. Before the collapse of the Ukrainian government and the quest for democracy among some of the Ukrainians, the government of Ukraine had relationship with many African countries, including with the government of Senegal, headed by the former president, Wad. And of course, there were some relationships in terms of economic development, and Ukraine was involved with small African countries. But that was an elaboration of what happened during the Cold War, because many Africans ended up in Ukraine at that time. If you look at America's relations with Africa, you can see different levels of the relationship. The big issue for the Africans is how can the Africans negotiate with the United States as the big nations are getting stronger and stronger, likely through China. So U.S. relations with Africa is being affected this time around by economics. That's one of the reasons why the question of oil in the many African countries where oil is coming from is very relevant for U.S.-Africa relations today. Angola, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, Chad, Nigeria, Ghana, and maybe Liberia, you can even go to Sierra Leone and go all the way north to Mauritania. So oil becomes a very important issue in terms of U.S. relations with Africa. The African countries with oil certainly are at a higher level of interaction with America. But that relationship is being undermined by the growing involvement of Chinese in African affairs. The dollar stores in America have their echo chambers in Africa today. So these are two interesting developments in U.S.-Africa relations. The role of industrial development. And that's one of the reasons why when you look at U.S. relationship with Africa, you pay attention to oil as this issue. Secondly, how technology transfer becomes more and more interesting. One good index in understanding America's relationship with Africa is to look at the new trends in terms of industrial transfer. And one of the reasons why during the Cold War, the Chinese were not very effective in Africa, except for technology transfer. And the most important area for U.S. policymakers at that time was to pay attention to the Soviet Union on the one hand, and then the Chinese, who were federalized at that time of the Soviet Union. But the Chinese broke away from the Soviet Union, and of course that created a new day for the Chinese. So today, when you look at U.S.-African relations, you have to go back to history and see how over the last 200 years, U.S. relations with Africa is very much related to U.S. relations with China. At that particular time in history, after the Civil War, the Chinese were coming here as workers. But the Chinese have made 180 degrees. Today, Chinese are very much involved with America economically. Technology transfer is very much mutual, although there are differences between the Chinese and America. So if you're a scholar who is looking at U.S. relations with Africa, you have to go back to economics, you have to go back to cultural relationships, and you have to go back to political stability. And that is one of the reasons why all these scholars who are interested in U.S. relations in Africa will talk about governance, governance, and governance. And that is why Nigeria becomes a very interesting item in terms of U.S. policy towards Africa. If the Nigerian leadership is seriously interested in governance, and good governance, this election is the most critical point of entry between America's relationship with Africa. Nigeria is just one of the 54 African countries. Every African country has diplomatic relations with the United States. But what is very critical now for U.S. policy towards Africa is how can the Africans engage America at the economic level. The Africans are engaging in American relationships through a number of ways. Technology transfer, governance, remittances is very much related to economics. There are billions of dollars coming from African diaspora to the continent. So when we talk about governance, Africans must make it categorically clear to themselves. If they are going to have good relationship with America, they should have good governance. If they have good governance, then their people are empowered to speak for themselves. That is why when some of the Nigerians are trying to get Americans to jockey for one party or the other, they are muddying the water. They should have free and fair elections without any American intervention, lobbies and other groups included in the narrative. And this is one of the reasons why it should be clear, categorically clear today, that U.S.-Africa relations revolves around the economy. And most importantly for the Africans is governance. And when the economy in the United States is strong to engage Africa competitively like the Chinese are doing now, the better for Africa-U.S. relations. Alternatively, if the African governments are able to demonstrate to the rest of the world that they can have their political battles, they don't kill each other, they don't create crises like in Southern Sudan, in Rwanda, in Burundi, in Ethiopia, in Uganda, and many other places where you have political turmoil, and that's the way it is for the Africans who are interested in U.S. policy towards Africa.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if you stop every time a dog barks, your road will never end. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The recent snap parliamentary election has produced a seven-party coalition government in Lesotho, as all parties emerged from the February 28th vote short of a majority in the 120-member legislature. The balloting capped a close election intended to restore stability in the Southern African nation. Violence erupted there 6 months ago between the police and army, following Prime Minister Thomas Thabane's decision to dismiss the army commander. In June, Thabane had temporarily suspended parliament to forestall a change in government. Following the August 30th violence, the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, mediated an agreement among Thabane's coalition partners to reconvene parliament in order to prepare for the election 2 years earlier than scheduled to help end the crisis. Pakatita Mosisidi, who had served previously as prime minister, will be named as Lesotho's next prime minister. Prime Minister Thabane conceded defeat during a press interview on March 5th. International observers note that elections won't resolve the root causes of Lesotho's recent political challenges, as the country must still address security sector reforms and engage in constitutional, parliamentary, and civil service reform. The United States congratulates the people of Lesotho for participating peacefully in the voting. With important elections scheduled in Nigeria, Ethiopia, Burundi, Burkina Faso, and other African nations this year, Lesotho has set an example of peaceful polling. The United States shares the hopes of the Basotho that these elections will allow Lesotho to move beyond a period of political uncertainty and strengthen national unity. This commitment is essential to provide a foundation for an effective, accountable government that serves the needs of the people. We commend Lesotho's Independent Electoral Commission for organizing a professional and well-run poll, especially in light of the compressed timeline. SADC deserves great credit for supporting Lesotho's peaceful election. We welcome its ongoing commitment to helping Lesotho strengthen its democratic institutions and rule of law. The United States remains committed to our strong partnership with Lesotho and to achieving our shared objectives of improved health, shared prosperity, and effective and accountable government.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.